Welcome back to this episode of the Sports Talk ATL podcast. I am Chase Searle at Sports Talk ATL on Twitter, joined by Alex Sword at Go Sports Talk on Twitter and Jake Gordon at Can't Guard Jake on Twitter. Guys, last time we were here, the Falcons are in last place. No longer moved up to what, second place? Because the Saints lost, the Panthers, they're up there. No more winless teams in the NFC South. But I have to say, the NFC South might be one of the worst divisions in football. So there's going to be some wins out there, the Falcons. Let's get your takeaways for their win over the Seahawks. I'll start with mine. This offense is legit. Like, now we face the Saints, the Seahawks, and the Rams, averaging 26 points per game. I think if you look at any pretty much advanced metrics, we're one of the better offenses in the league, ahead of teams like the Chiefs and the Bills. Yes, that's not sustainable. Natural regression is in line. But Cordell Patterson is a beast. Arthur Smith in this run game is legit. Drake London is legit. And we know Kyle Pitts is legit. They've got like a little three-headed monster here, and if they can get a quarterback, there's a lot of pieces here you got to like.
Yeah, my big takeaway, you brought up Drake London. My back to that draft pick, I said it at the time, you guys, even myself included, we all hated A.J. Terrell for the most part. Some people liked him. 90% of the fan base threw a tantrum over the A.J. Terrell pick. Same thing with the Drake London pick, and I'm like, guys, you got to calm down and let this guy play. Because it's just going to be an A.J. Terrell situation again. And it kind of looks like it is, because Drake London looks really good. He might be better than Kyle Pitts. So stop overreacting to the draft picks on the draft night, man. Give these guys a chance.
Yeah, I definitely was Garrett Wilson and Jameson Williams over Drake London personally. But, yeah, I think you said it right there. You know, you just can't judge your draft pick. I mean, A.J. Terrell just made all pro, and we were all – I definitely didn't like the pick to begin with, but that was because I was at LSU. I was at the national championship. I watched Jamar cook him. But then again, you know, when Jamar came into the league and started cooking everybody else, it was like, oh, okay.
It turns out Jamar Chase is just really good.
Yeah, that's all it is. But back to the Falcons, I mean – Chase, you said it. This offense is for real, and this is the exact reason we hired Arthur Smith in the first place and why we thought it was such a good hire. It's starting to look like that Titans offense that was so efficient on the ground with Derrick Henry and Ryan Tannehill having his career years under Arthur Smith, mainly through play action, and that's really all Marcus Mariota has been successful doing. You get him in an empty set, and he looks like shit. But if you get him out on the perimeter, he looks like a decent little quarterback. I think the run game was the biggest surprise to me. And credit to the changes along the offensive line. Drew Dahlman and Elijah Wilkinson, he didn't play in the Seattle game. Colby Gossett stepped in, and he filled in admirably. The run game is just there, and it looks like the real deal, because this isn't, you know, the Saints are a pretty good defense. The Rams, you know, the Falcons run game wasn't as potent against the Rams, but 200 yards against the Rams. Cordell Patterson had a career high last week against the Seahawks. This is the real deal. You know, I don't think it's a fluke.
Yeah, and, you know, we talk about overreacting to draft picks, too. Richie Grant looks really good, and people were so, oh, my God, what a waste of a pick. What, I mean, this is just Falcons fans in general. They're very hurt people. But Richie Grant looks really good, and him and Jalen Hawkins, that might be a future pair on the back end on the defensive side. Like, the Falcons have some good young pieces. I've always said this. I've never said that they lack young talent. They have some guys. How many games are they going to put it together for?
If you just look at the last two draft classes, the way they're performing this year, I think you have to be super like impressed and feel a lot better about where the regime and, you know, add on top of that, Arthur Smith's play calling has obviously been very good. He's got this offense clicking, that zone blocking scheme. Like you said, the play action working off of it. I mean, we're a couple of Marcus Mariota just absolute gaffes away from being 3-0. And like, that's not ridiculous take. And we definitely should at worst be 2-1 right now on this team. For as much as everyone was talking about being the worst in the league, I mean, they're like, at least so far, like, they are a middle of the pack team, if not even slightly better so far. And like, and a lot of these teams are going to get better. It's still early in the season, but like, I mean, we talk about Cordell Patterson. I mean, this guy, like, if you had to put him, like, rank him, and it's insane that we're even talking this, because the guy's like on the wrong side of 30 and he's only been starting as a running back. But like, among all running backs, like, the watching him run, I'm like, dude, he is like a top 10 running back. And I don't even think that's ridiculous to say, which is absurd, because he just started running in his like eighth career, or eighth year of his career.
Yeah, and I'm not the guy who puts on my cape for the Falcons, like puts on the fan rose-colored glasses. I'll tell you how it is. This is not the worst roster in the NFL, like people were saying. This is not the worst team in the NFL. No, and I always thought that was pretty asinine, especially when you look at teams like the Bears. Win-loss record, regardless, the Falcons do not have the worst roster in the NFL. That was an insane thing to say.
Yeah, I'm mostly shocked about Cordarrelle Patterson. He's not running like a 31-year-old. He runs like he's a rookie on his rookie
contract. I think he's second in the league in rushing.
Bro. He runs so
unreal. He's a man among boys. I mean, and like he's 6'2", 230 pounds. He's still got the speed that made him one of the best kick returners in all of baseball, or all of baseball, all of football. And then on top of that, he's hurdling dudes. Like the way he hurdled that dude in the fourth quarter of a game where he already has over 100 rushing yards. And you think about this guy being 6'2 and 230 pounds, like guys that big aren't supposed to move like that, aren't supposed to be able to jump that high and still keep running. And then on top of that, not only does he jump that high, then he finishes off with power because he is 6'2, 230 pounds. I mean, this guy is unbelievably impressive. And that's why I say, top 10 running back. There's not, I love watching this guy play. I mean, he runs hard. And I think there was, I don't know if you saw this, but supposedly on Friday, I was listening to this on the radio yesterday when I was getting coffee. And, Cordarrelle Patterson, stood up in front of the locker room on Friday and was like, guys, I'm not fucking going home with a loss. And, everyone clearly, responded to that. They responded it really well. I think Michael Walker came out and said it. I think it was Drake London. There were a couple guys that said something after. It was like, yo, when he did that, it was like, yo, it's on. We're not fucking losing this game. And they come out and listen, they almost choked at the end like a typical Falcons game. And I was fully ready to be on here. We're 0-3, even though we should be 3-0 or 2-1 or whatever. But, hey, the defense stood up. As bad as the defense was in three quarters, and we can talk about, the problems there, they stood up in the fourth. No points allowed, a big sack, big interception. You talk about Richie Grant. Grady Jarrett obviously was huge. So, there's some pieces here if they can get a quarterback.
Yeah, and, it's funny. We talk about Arthur Smith was not going to have his Derrick Henry in Atlanta, and he kind of does. I mean, he's not strong, but he kind of does.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah.
That's true. On the bad side, somebody I was really high on coming into the season was Casey Hayward. And though he had an interception against the Rams, he hasn't looked that great. And the defense as a whole hasn't looked that great. For most of the afternoon in week three, Geno Smith looked like the best he's ever looked in his entire career. And I don't think that's, a credit to him. I think it's the Falcons' defense was just horrid. For much of the afternoon, I kept banging my head against the wall about how every single play, no matter if it was 3rd and 7, the corners were 10 yards off the ball. And Geno Smith was just dinking and dunking all the way down the field. Maybe that was the game plan. I don't know. But it clearly didn't work. And, to Dean Pease's credit, second half, 3 points, really impressive there. But that's not going to work going forward, especially against, we got the Browns coming up, number one rushing attack in the NFL. That's a scary thought.
Yeah, I've always felt like our rush defense, and I know that Seattle ran it pretty well on us. I think, they had 5 yards per carry, but I've always felt like because we have no pass rush and our corners have genuinely been weak outside of AJ Terrell, the run game, I don't usually see the Falcons over the years get as gashed through the run as they do through the pass. So I'm a little more confident that they might have some success, tentatively constant, because I think they could let Brissett look a lot like Geno Smith. That's the problem. I think that's the real problem, because yes, the Browns are going to get theirs on the ground, but if you can hold Jacoby Brissett, you can stop that offense. And I think we have enough firepower on offense to keep up with them. But I think you could see another situation where Brissett looks like Geno Smith and has 300 yards and you're like, oh man, is Jacoby Brissett legitimate? No, our pass defense is just ass.
The caveat to that, what I just said, is the second level of the defense is much more equipped to stop the run than they are the pass. Michael Walker and Rashawn Evans look like 90s linebackers back there. I know Michael Walker's had a pick, almost had another pick last week against the Seahawks, but they are horrendous in coverage. But against the run, they're those big guys that'll stick their nose in anywhere and they'll stop the run. So to that point, There is a real chance Jacoby Brissett lights the Falcons up. That's
Jacoby Brissett has not looked bad this season. I mean, he hasn't been.
I'm sure there was an advanced stat where he was up there with like Josh Allen. I mean, and I know a lot of these things when you're only through 3 weeks, especially advanced stats, can be very skewed. But he was like up there, like with some names where I was like, whoa, like one of these guys doesn't belong.
I've watched the Browns because they played Thursday night, and then I bet on them the week before. Like, I've watched the Browns. He's not bad. I mean, he's never been really, even if you talk about backups, he's always been one of the high-end backups. Like, he's played pretty well, and he's a good offensive system with a good team around him.
I think the Browns and Falcons are something like the only two teams that have scored like more than 26 points in every game. So that's totally expected. When we came into this matchup, we totally thought we were going to be the two best offenses in football or whatever. Yeah, I mean, let's just like throw this out for shits and gigs. Like, would you be more scared if the Browns had Baker Mayfield right now or Jacoby Brissett?
I think I would actually say Jacoby Brissett.
I think I'm more scared of Brissett.
Me too. Baker's just so good for one interception, one fumble. He's good to fuck up once. He's like Marcus Mariota. You can expect him to fuck up one time during the game. Jacoby Brissett will protect the ball.
Yeah, and it's like you look at the Browns and how good they are literally everywhere. Like, there's not really any big weaknesses on their team. Like, if you have a quarterback that can just take care of business, take care of the ball, keep things moving on schedule, that's a little bit better than having somebody like Baker who may have a little more upside, but, you know, is prone to mess something up more.
I want to talk about one of those second level guys, Michael Walker. I mean, he's been tremendous for us. We kind of
been on the Michael Walker train forever. Like,
yeah,
actually,
yeah, right. Yeah. But he's made some plays kind of as like, you know, a reserve linebacker. Obviously, he had a pick six last year. I think he had a couple picks last year. He's had some occasional sacks, but now as like the leader, the Mike of this defense, he's turned into, I mean, I think if you go look at the PFF grades, and I don't take PFF grades as like the end all be all, but he's been up there at the top every single game with Grady Jarrett. And Richie Grant's been up there a lot too. So, I mean, like I said, you look at the last couple of draft class, Taquan Graham, Michael Walker, Richie Grant, Drake London, Kyle Pitts, you start to say like, hey, like maybe they have gotten some guys. Aide, I can't say that guy's last name. I don't know if I'll be able to say that guy.
Ogundeji had a rough game. He had a rough game against the Seahawks, but the two prior weeks to that, he was very good. And on top of that, Drew Dahlman. PFF is not giving him any love. And
I know they ranked him the 44th ranked center or 40th out of 44th ranked center, but they love Matt Hennessy. Makes absolutely
what I saw that is just not true. I mean, Drew Dahlman's doing a better job this year than Matt Hennessy was last year. That's not
he was like top 10 center last year for some. It did some PFF grades. They definitely have some positions where I'm like, dude, you have no idea what you're talking
about.
They're
pretty bad with offensive line, in my opinion.
Jason Kelsey was just talking about how he was like, I think NFL agents pay PFF to give their guys good grades. He was just
because
like,
Devin
no
White will have like a 40. And I'm like, bro, I'm watching Devin White. And I'm like, bro, this guy's like all over the field, has like 140 tackles. Like, yeah, maybe he blows some covers. He's a little over aggressive. But like, how is he the worst linebacker in football? It just doesn't strike well with me.
Well, when the PFF Falcons guy came on our live stream that we did that one night on that old show that was fucking terrible, he like explained it to us, like how they did the grades. And I was like more confused after what he told us. He was like, well, we take a sample of five. He's like, and then we give a grade. And then we go back and watch the full game. And then we give a grade after that. And I'm like, what? Like, do you remember that, Alex? Because it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, I definitely left more confused than I showed up. That's for sure. It's just better to think of it as like a Fugazi, a Fugate. You know, it doesn't exist.
It's like box score stats. It doesn't tell you everything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, well, that was talking PFF with the boys.
It is funny, but I'm pleasantly all around pleased. Like, I enjoy sitting down on Sunday and watching Falcons football. And I didn't think I would say that, especially after last year, because record aside, and we might win less games than last year. It's going to be close. Seven games I've put us around, you know, where our over-under is now, if you had to place it today. But it's more fun every week. I mean, these were teams like the Saints and the Rams where we were getting beat by, you know, literally 40 points, absolutely embarrassed. Now you have, you know, two competitive games against this. You take care of business on the road. And like I said, I know people are going to be like, oh, it's the Seahawks, but you look at that position where you're on the West Coast for 2 weeks, playing a team that isn't as bad as people think. The Seahawks are not, I mean, they're not good, but like they can win games. You know, they beat the Broncos in one of the toughest places to play. You know, that's impressive. That's impressive. And the NFL, everyone's impressive, but like just the way that they travel and everything and going on the road and getting that win, like that was a good win.
Through three weeks, the product is infinitely more impressive than it was at all last year. Like, I don't care about the seven wins or not. Like, just the eye test alone. I mean, the offense just is night and day. The defense is slightly better, I think. It's just an infinitely more impressive product.
Yeah, I don't play ifs and buts with this team because they honestly just don't deserve it after everything that they've done. But man, if they were sitting at 2-1 with that win week one against New Orleans, like we would all be feeling ecstatic about this season.
My playoff take would actually make it to air. I'm not going to argue it yet, but here, let's have a little fun here. I got the Falcons schedule pulled up here. Now that we've seen this team for 3 weeks, you know, you can make assumptions about how other teams will get better, but let's do a little win loss. Let's paint how many wins we're going to get this season. All right. Browns this upcoming week at home.
I think we win. And I wanted to say this earlier, and we said this last week, Chase, that if we lost that Seahawks game, this Browns game was going to be unbearable. Inside the bins, it was going to be unbearable. It was going to be empty, mostly Browns fans. But now I really, really think that we could get – if we get this win at home, you know, maybe –
you're going to have a fan base. You're going to have a Falcon fan base. They're going to be people like chirping Falcons. And I'll say this. This is a big weekend for us boys. Like, I know, Jake, you're not in Atlanta, but, I mean, we got – the Braves coming home against the Mets for obviously that. And then we got Sunday night baseball, a bunch of night games there. And we have the Sunday Browns game. And then you obviously have college football Saturday. So it's a big weekend coming up. Great slate of college football again. I'm going to say we win. Then we go at Bucks. I'll give that one a loss.
Hang on. The Hurricane could, you know,
that's 2 weeks from now.
Interesting.
I am interested to see, but it's supposed to be a cat three coming in there. My brother
Rex Raymond James Stadium, we will not be playing it there. Like, we will be playing it, and that could be, you know.
Maybe we'll be playing it in New Orleans.
Who knows?
All right, we come back home against the Niners. I'm going to say win.
I'm going to say win on this one, too.
The Niners look bad offensively.
Jimmy Garoppolo pulled an Orlovsky. I think Nick Bosa is still hurt. Trent Williams is out. I'm going to say win on this one.
Jimmy G is a bad quarterback, and I am so sick and tired of everybody on his jock. I mean, he is not a good quarterback.
Dude, people called him sexy Kirk Cousins, which is objectively a really funny nickname. He's not as good as Kirk Cousins. Like, he's not.
I don't know, bro. You watched that Monday Night Football game against the Eagles. I was like,
well, that's Kirk Cousins in prime time. So
That was the worst I've ever seen. Yeah, it's just hilarious how some of these guys get in prime time and just shit themselves.
Kirk Cousins is like 1-10 against the spread in prime time.
All right, so I got us a 3-3. I think Jake got us. I think me and Alex have us a 3-3. Then we play the Bengals.
I'm going to say win.
Where is it? Win. Is that in Cincy?
It's in Cincy.
I'm going to say win. That's a loss. We got a punch up this year. I said we got a punch up this year. This is going to be a punch up game. I'm going to say win.
I'll say loss, so we're all on the same 3-4 bandwagon. Then we get back home, Panthers. We're winning that.
Oh, yeah, easy.
4-4.
Matt Rhule may be fired after that game. Hang on, I'm calling my shot. If we win that game, Matt Rhule might be fired after that game.
It's revenge for Dan Quinn getting fired. All right, we got to speed this up just a little bit. Let's keep it going.
All right, Falcons-Panthers. Or Falcons-Chargers. Loss.
Loss.
Falcons-Panthers again?
Win.
Win.
Falcons-Bears. Dude, we're over 500 if we win the Bears game.
Win.
Win.
And then we play the Commanders.
Win.
Let me come home and play the Steelers, bro. We could actually.
Oh, the Steelers are bad too. That's a win too.
This is actually getting kind of promising. And dude, think about how bad the Saints have been.
Win.
Ravens. Wow.
What are we looking at? Like 11-5 at this point.
We're gonna lose to the Ravens. We're losing to the Ravens.
We'll lose to the Ravens. Lamar will run for 250 yards.
At home against the Cardinals is not a guaranteed loss.
Oh, no. That's later in the season. That's Modern Warfare 2 is gonna be out. That's a win.
Yeah, dude. Yes, Kyler Murray be addicted. He'll be on a six-game losing streak, and then we finish at home for the Bucks. All right, I'm not gonna get it, but this actually is.
Did we just find like 10 wins on the schedule?
All of a sudden, we're a 10-7 football team. All right. Well, hey, hopefully we get a win. Hey, I'm just saying, if we get a win at home against the Browns, like, we're gonna have some legitimate hope. And
but
I
by the
never
way,
thought, I never
this
thought
goes back to people whenever I said we would go 7-10, and people would be like, Falcons are cool with 7-10. Shut up. They could easily go 7-10.
I mean, now that you look at it, there is definitely 7 wins out there. Like,
if they'll get them, that's yet to be seen. But there's 7 wins on that schedule.
Yeah, I mean, and especially if you upset one of the teams that we're just like, oh, there's no way you can beat. Like, but yeah,
it's the NFL, dude. It literally happens every week. The Jaguars just beat the shit out of the Chargers.
Like, yeah, and people would be like, no way the Falcons can win at home against the Chargers. I'm like, bro, they could. Like, they literally could.
Yeah.
People don't understand how razor thin the margins of these teams are on, like, in the NFL.
I think this year is really like, I feel like I almost forgot how razor thin the margins were because the Falcons were getting the shit kicked out of them so often. But like, now it's like, okay, we got a little bit of talent. Like, I think a huge key that, like, I'm sure, like, we'll talk about, but a lot of other people aren't talking about, is just the fact just having Arthur Smith there for a second year, like implementing like his offense, like getting, because like, dude, remember when Shanahan was here? Like, the first year was a shit show. Like, we started off 4-0, and then we lost eight of our last 12 games, missed the playoffs, go 8-8, and the offense looked terrible. Then the next year we go to the Super Bowl 16-0. So I think that second year in a system is so big, and I think you're seeing that this year.
Yeah, I mean, this past week was the first week that we saw four quarters of effective offense. You know, in the Saints game, it was 3.5 quarters, and then the Falcons offense just shut down. Against the Rams, it was one quarter, it was the fourth quarter. And this past week against Seattle, it was all four quarters, and it looked great. Tight end screens, deep shots. Marcus Mariota missed an opening play touchdown on Kyle Pitts. Yeah, I don't think Arthur Smith is a, you know, top five play caller in the league by any means, but he's certainly not. I mean, he's well above average, above average.
No, it's been fun to watch, especially when you thought we'd have some personnel issues on that side. But we got a long season left. It's fun to watch. It's about time we had some good stuff to say about the Falcons. But it's baseball time. We're really in the nitty gritty of the baseball time. Last night, Bryce Elder, out of nowhere, throws the first complete shutout in almost exactly a year. The last time it happened was September 24th, Max Fried, 2021. So maybe that's a good sign. We had a complete game shutout exactly a year ago, and now we have one this year. Oh, looks like we're winning the World Series again. But yeah, I mean, I don't really know what to say about this guy. I mean, there were some ridiculous takes where people were like, yeah, he's going to be the number three in the playoffs list. And I don't even know if he's going to make the playoff rotate or playoff roster. I would say tentatively, because of this situation, he probably makes it over like Kirby Yates and as like a long reliever. Oh, I mean, I don't think he gets a start unless Spencer Strider's injured. But, yeah, I mean, but 2.76 ERA over 49 innings, that's pretty damn good.
Yeah, we've seen this role before. Max Fried did it when he was a young pup. That leverage role where you are the starter that comes out of the pen, basically.
Yeah, Max, like Drew Smiley really, last year is what I view.
Yeah, Max did it before. I could see him doing that. That's fine. I'd give him that spot over Odorizzi. But the fact of the matter
don't even get me fucking started with Odorizzi, dude. That guy, the fact that that guy's – I mean, why do the Braves almost every year decide to get a guy that like a Robbie Erlin or a Tommy Malone that they just want to throw out there and get shelled and lose the game?
Well,
I mean, I know.
To be fair, we did trade Will Smith for him, so I don't know what you expected in return.
Yeah, but you know what pisses me off is you go look at Will Smith's numbers.
Don't say it.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
They're pretty good.
Don't say that. Don't say that.
What do you think he has? Over under 3 ERA? I have no idea. And
I don't know, but I'm going to keep talking while you look.
2.66. That pisses me off.
Oh, my God. That's horrendous. That's horrible.
You know, the fact of the matter is, I don't care how you feel about it. You know, if Spencer Strider's healthy, it's going to be Strider, Morton, Wright, and Fried. That's a
fact. Yeah. I mean, there's no discussion.
I don't want to hear none of this Elder over Charlie Morton stuff, because it's just simply not going to happen.
Nah, that's
I don't even know how the argument could be made. Outside
because people on Twitter are stupid.
People
like, so
look at
reactionary.
Baseball reference pages and be like, oh my God, 2.76 ERA, 4.2 ERA. I'm definitely going to go with Elder. Bro, like you talked about, all of Elder starts have come against like the Marlins and Nationals.
He has like 6 combined starts against the Marlins and Nationals, and then he has 3 that are like the Padres, the Mets, and another pretty good team, and he has gotten destroyed in those 3.
outside of the first two starts for Charlie Morton, he's been locked in. I mean, he's got like just over a 3 ERA if you take out those horrendous starts at the beginning of the year. I mean, Charlie Morton is his stuff is there. He's getting a lot of whiffs. And Chase says this all the time, and it's so true. You know, strikeout stuff plays in the postseason. There's not many people. We got two 200 strikeout guys, and both of them are going to be pitching. They're both going to be starting in the postseason. I couldn't believe I saw that on Twitter. I really
I saw it from multiple people, too, which I thought was crazy. Charlie Morton has 78 career playoff innings, by the way.
Charlie Morton was starting over Max Fried in the playoffs last year. So now, and that, like, and you don't think experience matters to Brian Snicker? Like, what are we talking about here?
Exactly.
And like,
argument.
Yeah, I mean, Morton has been much better outside of a slow start. The one thing about Morton that kind of frustrates you, and listen, you're just going to have to deal with it because it's been like this all year. He strikes out like 11, 12 batters per nine, but he's given up a ton of homers this year. But hey, you know when it's the hardest time to hit a home run? October. It's the hardest time. It's colder. It the ball's not flying out as hard. There's pressure. It's the hardest time to hit a home run. So I like, and yeah, the Elder over Morton thing, people are on crack. People just like to complain. And I love to complain, but there's some things that you just can't complain about. Also big thing that happened yesterday, Matty O, my favorite player, with a rocket off the foul pole. Congrats, Matty O. Never doubted you. Never said a bad word about you. I really love you. I'm glad everything happened. I'm glad we got you. That's all I'm going to say. All positive vibes for Matty O.
Yeah, we really need him to heat up. I mean, we can't have Austin Riley and Matt Olson slumping. And Austin Riley looks like he's back out of it. And hopefully that homer for Matt Olson brings him back out of it. But what's even crazy is we're like 11-4 in September with Matt Olson and Austin Riley just shit in the bed. This lineup is so deep. It's incredible.
You know who else has been sneaky slumping is Vaughn Grissom.
Yeah, but to me, Vaughn Grissom was always going to be sneaky slumping. You know, like
he was going to regress to the mean. He wasn't going to be a 345 hitter for the entire.
When Ozzie came back, I was really happy because I'm like, all right, like there's probably a good chance, especially towards the end of the season, like with Vaughn getting into the games 50 and stuff like that, that he could hit a little rookie wall. But the thing that I am impressed about Grissom, you know, he's got a good eye. You know, he takes his walks. So I do think he's going to be like, no, do I think he's going to hit like three bombs in the postseason? No, I would be pretty surprised if he hit one homer. But I do think he can be a guy who can, you know, get on base at a 330, 340 clip, 350 clip. And if you can do that and play good defense, you're fine. I also think, you know, listen, let's not sleep on Orlando Arcia. He had a home run yesterday. I think there's a good chance you see him a decent amount in the postseason too. I don't think it's just going to be Vaughn Grissom, particularly if Vaughn Grissom struggles a little at the beginning.
Yeah, the thing is with Vaughn, too, is he's a splash guy. He can make a splash play. So that's important.
Staying on the rookies, Michael Harris approaching 2020, 20 homers, 20 steals. I think he's at 19 home runs right now. And I saw somebody mention it on Twitter about the rookie of the year. And that's interesting since Strider's done for the regular season. If Michael Harris gets 2020, or do you guys think that it's all wrapped up?
I think Strider's going to get it.
I think Strider's going to win it. But here's my thing about – so, like, I'm, like, doing those awards, and I was waiting kind of to the end of the season to do the Rookie of the Year just to see everything played out, but I'm going to do it soon because Strider's out for the season. But then I'm also going to give, like, an MVP out, and, like, my MVP for the team is Michael Harris. My Rookie of the Year, though, is Spencer Strider. So it's just kind of one of those things, like, who do I think's meant the most to the team this year? Like, I don't think it's even close. Michael Harris, like, if you look over a full sample size, he's been the best player on the Braves, better than Austin Riley, who's been fantastic, but he's been better. You know, better than everyone. But I just think Spencer Strider, to me, like just the stuff that he's done, like if he was here the whole year, he wins the NL Cy Young. Like he actually wins it. Like I don't even think it would be particularly close. Like everyone wants to be like, oh, Alcantara is the best pitcher in the league. Listen, from the moment Spencer Strider stepped into the rotation, he has been the best pitcher in all of baseball. So like that's going to like to me, like I don't know how you don't win Rookie of the Year when you're the best pitcher in the league for 4 months.
I got some news. We got something fresh off the press. Kyle Muller activated. I think we kind of
that happened yesterday. But well, I guess
it says 9:46 a.m. It's 9:46.
I guess they announced that he would be starting, and now he's official. Yeah. Because they had to option Elder probably to make
room. Alan Rangel.
Alan, I didn't even know he was up here.
I didn't either. I think he was up here for about 6.5 hours or something.
I am excited to see Mueller on the mound tonight. I mean, what a weird way to end the season. Like, Spencer Strider gets injured. Now you're starting Elder, Mueller, and Odorizzi, three guys that weren't even on the roster like a month or 2 months ago, in one of the most pivotal series. Thank God you're playing the Nationals. And you know we've won 15 out of our last 16 at Nationals Park.
I love that.
And if you go look at our runs per game at Nationals Park, it's like 6 or 7. Like, it's ridiculous. And I think we've set a record for the most home runs in a single season at National Park this year, and we still have 2 more games left to play. So if there was ever a place to get these fucking bats going before the most pivotal series, it's at Nationals Park.
It's going to be weird when Marcel comes and pinch hit home runs in the postseason. I mean, he is good for it. It is so wild
how he has over a 900 OPS this month.
Buddy, I was looking at it yesterday. So he had 2 hits yesterday, a double and a home run. You know what he was hitting going into yesterday's game in this month? 314. So he's probably at 333 this month with an 1,000 OPS. Like, all of a sudden, playoff Marcel is back.
Playoff Eddie.
That's what I was just saying.
He has
over a 925
unreal.
OPS this month.
Eddie has been unreal recently.
But you also have to understand, the whole Marcel Ozuna in October is a real thing. Like, that is why we got him in the first place, because he absolutely smoked us in the NLDS. He had 4 homers with his stupid neon sleeve, but now I love his neon sleeve because it's here. I'm trying to get the numbers, but I mean, he's watched his OPS rise by 30 points and he's only played in 10 games. I don't know, boys. If we can get the bats going, this team's scary.
It's going to be interesting to see how Snit finagles this lineup. It really is. Who's DHing? I mean, Ronnie's going to be playing every game, so it doesn't matter there. You know,
we have the weirdest lineup.
Thank God Snicker turns into Phil Jackson in the playoffs. So,
well, we're going to need him to turn into Phil Jackson over these next 3 days, because I'm not going to lie. When Friday hit, Odorizzi's on the mound just getting schlocked by the Phillies. Aaron Nola's dealing. We're going to fall to 2.5 back. The very next morning, I wake up, Spencer Strider's on the IL. I'm like, we just waved the white flag. Mets won the division. I'm not even going to watch the rest of these damn games this weekend. And next thing you know, we're 1 game back. It's like this division, I feel like it slipped out of our hands 8 or 9 times. And then every time it just creep back. And it's like,
but there's no way. Yeah, there's no way Snicker waves the white. If you can win the division this weekend, you have to put your best foot forward. You have to go for it.
Oh, I think it's all hands on deck for this upcoming series. I think they've rested everyone. You got that Bryce Elder not making any relievers pitch after you played 9-10 games in a row. Then you get these 2 games where hopefully you can take care of business against a lesser team and not have to waste your elite guys. And then you get an off day Thursday. So Friday, Saturday.
That's when the playoffs start. That's when the playoffs start.
That's all hands on deck. Like, you've given Max Fried 10 days off. Like, you've pushed these guys back to get them right there. It's all hands on deck, and it should be legendary. I mean, you get Scherzer, DeGrom, and Bassett coming into your house with a series, with a division that could be tied, and I hope it's tied. It would be awesome.
I hope so, too.
I'd rather it
be tied than us leading. I feel like the tie would just be so
No, I want it to be tied. Because I want it to be just a fucking heavyweight fight. I don't even want it to be, I mean, a sweep would be awesome. Cool. We sweep them and it's a tie and you win the division right there because you'd have the tiebreaker. But if you won 2 out of 3 and it was just a heavyweight fucking blast, a couple walk-off wins, shit like that, that's a dream.
Dude, I don't believe you that you said you wouldn't want to sweep. You would be showing your ass.
No. I didn't say I wouldn't, but I'm just saying, it would be cool to have a nice little competitive series and come out on top. I'm not saying you still got to come out on top, a nice little heavyweight fight, that would be nice. It would be cool to sweep your way through the playoffs, but occasionally a game 7 to get the juices flowing, that's kind of fun.
I'm so pumped for this weekend series. It is going to be electric at the Battery and at Truist Park. It is going to be electric. Yeah, you said it. This weekend's going to be dope. Atlanta's going to be rocking. I mean, Atlanta's going to be rocking. I might go to this Browns game if I can find
I'm
some
going to,
tickets.
I'm going to try to go to the Browns game because we play at 7, play Sunday Night Baseball. I mean, it's like it's a great just like, all right, let's get a dub.
Are you double heading it? Are you going to do Falcons?
I think
and
so.
Bears?
The problem with the double heading is I always end up way too fucked up for the second double header. Like if the Falcons beat the Browns and we're 2-2, like I'm walking into the Braves Stadium pretty loaded.
Yeah. All right, like, let's wrap this up.
Like it's inevitable, you know. All right, I guess I don't even really know if we have any other topics, but that wraps up this episode of the Sports Talk ATL podcast. Thank you guys for joining us this week. We'll be back next week with more, hopefully, with your first place Atlanta Falcons.